Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding and welcome to the SBM Offshore First Quarter 2023 Trading Update Conference Call. At this moment, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would like to hand over the conference to Mr. Charles Albi, Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Thank you all for joining us today. This call is being recorded and will be available for replay on the company's website. Today's prepared remarks will be delivered by Mr. Bruno Chabas, followed by a Q&A session. Before we begin, I would like to point out the disclaimer at the bottom of our press release and remind participants that some of our comments today may include forward-looking statements reflecting SBM Offshore's view of future events. These matters involve risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to materially differ from our forward-looking statements. The risks are included in detail in SBM Offshore's 2022 annual report, which can be found on the company's website. Once again, we will welcome your questions after the conclusion of the prepared remarks. I will now turn the call over to Bruno.
Thank you all, and welcome to our call. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our first quarter trading update. My name is Bruno Chabas, CEO of SBM Offshore, and I'm joined today by the members of our management board, Øivind Tangen and Douglas Wood. Over the first quarter of 2023, SBM Offshore delivered good results in line with expectations. Our 2023 full year guidance is on track. Since the start of the year, several important milestones have been achieved. Let's start with commercial activities. Based on the positive market outlook for large and complex FPSOs with low break-even cost and low emission, SBM Offshore has ordered a new Fast4Ward MPF hull. This order brings the total number of hulls ordered to date to eight. As a reminder, the six first hulls have been allocated to projects, and exclusivity for the seventh one, which was ordered last year, has been granted to ExxonMobil Guyana. Another key achievement announced last week is the signature of a 10-year agreement with ExxonMobil Guyana for the operation and maintenance of Guyanese FPSO fleet. With an estimated impact of about $3 billion on revenue backlog, this agreement will add about 10% to year-end 2022 record order book of $30.5 billion. This contract, which acknowledge our operating expertise, also includes an integrated operation model combining SBM Offshore's and Mobil's Guyana experience and resources. It is the first of its kind. We believe this will set a new performance benchmark for the industry. Now, let's now have a look at the progress the team are making across our project execution and operation. The company continued to go through a major growing phase with currently five FPSO under construction and two new build hulls order. The project teams continue to monitor impacts related to the ongoing global inflationary pressures and supply chain constraints on project execution. Overall, delivery schedules remain on track and margin is robust at portfolio level. Let me now zoom in this quarter main achievements for projects under construction. FPSO Prosperity arrived safely in Guyana waters last month. The teams are currently completing commissioning activities. Two Fast4Ward MPF hulls have been delivered to the yards for FPSO Almirante Tamandaré and Alexandre de Gusmão. We closed the major project financing of $1.63 billion for FPSO Almirante Tamandaré. We have now one remaining project financing for FPSO Alexandre de Gusmão to secure, which is expected to be closed shortly. On the operating side, the overall performance was strong, with the fleet uptime in line with historical trend above 99% over the first quarter. On the renewable side, the construction of the three floating foundations for the Provence Grand Large project was completed. After the integration of the three turbines, which with a capacity of 8.4 megawatts each, the team will take care of the installation phase before the commissioning of the farm scheduled by year-end. I would like to highlight that all this progress was achieved with a solid HSSE performance, with a total recordable injury frequency rate of 0.07 over the first quarter of the year, below the 0.14 target set for the year. As always, safety remains SBM Offshore's top priority. Over to the financials. The company generated a total directional revenue of $742 million during the quarter of the year, compared to $970 million in the same period last year. This decrease is driven by the turnkey segment, reflecting the one-off divestment of 45% interest in FPSOs Alessandro de Gusmão and Almirante Tamandaré last year. The lease and operate segment increased year-on-year, benefiting from the full quarterly contribution of Liza Unity compared to last year. Net debt at the end of March stood at $6.4 billion, compared with $6.1 billion as of the end of 2022, supporting the ongoing investment in growth. These good results, which reflect our high level of activity, the reliability of our fleet, and the resilience of our turnkey division, are attributable to the hard work and talent of SBMers. We conclude with our 2023 full-year guidance. We maintain our 2023 directional revenue guidance at above $2.9 billion, of which around $1.9 billion is expected from the lease and operate segment, and above $1 billion from the turnkey segment. 2023 directional EBITDA guidance is also maintained at above $1 billion. The guidance considers the currently foreseen impact from both the pandemic and the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, both on project and operation. The direct and indirect effect of this event could continue to have a material impact on the company's business and result and the realization of the guidance for 2023. So in summary, we delivered, again, a strong performance, and guidance is on track. We deliver value to our shareholders with a dividend of $1.1 per share, representing a yield of above 7%. We demonstrated commercial success with the Guyanese O&M agreement signature, and we are ready to capture future growth with a new Hull order. We are on track to deliver our record order book, which provides cash flow visibility up to 2050. Finally, we booked tangible progress in our energy transition strategy with the completion of the construction of our offshore wind floaters and delivery of FPSO meeting the highest current environmental standard in the industry. So this concludes the prepared remark portion of the call today. Thank you for listening. And operator, now you can open the call for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will now take our first question from Corinne Jean Mulder from ING. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. And congratulations was, in my view, an interesting first quarter. I have a couple of questions. You speak about the $3 billion contracts And that's a first of its kind in the industry. So maybe you can elaborate on what the differences are and what the differences are with your existing fleet in Brazil, etc. The second question is on Tamandaré. The first oil is now being postponed by Petrobras to 2025, but the construction is going according to plan, in my view. Is there any contractual change for you if the first oil is later than expected, because you can deliver the vessel on time? And my final question on this one is, I know you are a cautious man, so you're not speculating on any hulls. Is there anything to say in what region, in what direction you are going to use this eighth hull in the future?
So thank you for your question and your interest. I'm going to take the last question first, and Oyvind is going to address the two other questions on the operating contract in Guyana and the Almirante Tamandaré delivery. So when we look at the market today, we see a lot of opportunity, and those opportunities for us are really in the Atlantic basins from Guyana, or even including, in fact, Mexico. So from Mexico to Brazil, and when you look on the African side, you see opportunity which could be in Namibia, which could be in Angola or other countries in Western Africa. All of these are areas where SBM Offshore believe that the know-how that we have, the experience and the ability to deliver value to all the stakeholders, including our clients, is important. And as such, positioning ourselves in advance of phase on this market is important. And that's the reason why we decided to make this investment into the eighth hull. So time will tell where this hull is going to be going, but we believe that the market interest and demand is such that we're going to have some news to come in the coming few months. Oyvind?
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Thank you for your question. So on the O&M agreement we reached with Exxon, it's different in a way that we've built an organization together with a client, eliminating past efficiencies in the typical client contractor organizational structure and integrated elements of the Exxon teams into our own organization, making it a really competitive organizational structure and combining the competencies between ourselves and the client. And then around that, we've built a compensation structure that rewards greatly the excellence in performance, and we hope to harvest more value out of this contract structure than the classic O&M in a lease and operate structured contract. For the AT, the project, sorry, was there a question to the question?
Yeah, no, additional then. So there is a difference, let me say, for Lisa Destiny compared to what you have serviced thus far for that that floater.
The new contract structure will apply to all existing and future contracts in Guyana.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. For the AT, we remain on track as per the reports, and the view from Petrobras is from a field perspective, so we don't comment on that. Our position commercially then will be once we are ready, we enter into the compensation as if on the lease and operate structure. So our readiness hasn't changed, so the economic situation remains unchanged.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Thijs Bakker from ABN AMRO ODDO BHF. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions. First, you talk in the press release extensively on COVID impact China as well as inflation kicking in on the cost side. Can you give us a bit more flavor where inflation is higher than in your assumptions, and maybe what kind of impact we should expect? Second question is what I missed in this press release is what is the current value of assets under construction? And what is the net debt related or the project debt related to these assets under construction right now? Do you have that as a consistent update as well. And finally, apart from Provence Grand Large, is there any progress to mention in the floating wind segment?
I'm sorry, could you rephrase the last question? We couldn't hear you.
Apart from the Provence Grand Large project, you gave an update there in the Q1 release. Is there anything else to mention in terms of progress on the floating wind side?
Yeah. So again, I will take the last question first, and Douglas is going to go through the first two questions with pleasure. If we look at the floating offshore wind activity, as you know, we're doing the construction of this pilot project, and we have been at it for the past few years. On this, we have learned a lot of lessons learned, and we announced last year a version 2 of the concept that we're developing. Now, version 2 is an evolution on technology and simplification, certainly, but that's only one step to make those products competitive in the market. So on this, we're making a lot of progress from an industrialization of the concept, how to interface with clients, how to make sure that we make the floating offshore wind within the economic parameter which are set by the market today. We can see that there are opportunities in the market coming up, and we still believe that there is a forecast that 6 gigawatts of capacity will be installed by the end of 2030. But at this stage, I would say that the market is fairly, there is a lot of excitement, but limited concrete opportunities at this stage. So we'll see how things are going to develop. We're early in the maturity of the market in the early phase, but we expect that things are going to develop in the coming few years. Douglas?
Yep. So morning, Thijs. So relative to your first question. There's no new message here. We just being consistent with the message that we've been bringing for multiple quarters. First on the pandemic, and then obviously we have the Russia-Ukraine war, which has brought supply chain and inflationary impacts. We've got multi-year projects, so we're still living with the impacts of those. And as we've been highlighting, you know, the degree to which it's possible to mitigate the impacts, it varies from project to project. But overall, we still see a robust project margin. And, yeah, you could see that at the end of last year. If you look at the IFRS gross margin, that was 18%. So we're just simply reiterating the same message from the previous quarters there. Then on the second question, for a trading update, we don't give that degree of specificity, but you will see that in a few months' time when we do the first half update. We'll give you the information then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Andre Mulder from Kepler Cheuvreux. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Two questions from my side. The first one on China. What status is there on the stake that Chinese companies are taking in floaters? Secondly, do you sense that any European measures to curb China influence might have an impact in that? That's the first question. Second question is on the O&M contract. To what extent is this a change in the strategy for ExxonMobil, implying that also for any new floaters, the O&M activities will be included in future contracts?
So on the last question, with regard to ExxonMobil, this question is really going to be better answered by them, and we cannot comment on what they intend to do in the future and where they want to go. What we can comment on is working together over the past few years, in fact many years, both of us have realized that there is a better way to execute and to perform on those type of projects. And this better way is really by combining the best of both companies in order to have an operation which is outstanding. And that's what we're doing at this stage. We believe that there is a lot of value to be brought to the market by doing so. And obviously, if this model delivers as we expect, we should see a continuation of this model on with a lot of other clients, not only with ExxonMobil, but with a lot of other clients. With regard to China interest, Douglas, do you want to take this, including the political side?
So we had two investments, one on Mero 2 from China Merchants. Is going to complete when the project completes. So that's still ongoing in process. Then there was another one where we borrowed some money against the our share of the cash flows from Illabella. So we announced that at the end of the year, and we've now closed that transaction.
But it's not in the press release. So
yeah, so we announced it and we said it was it would complete in due course.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. And that question on Europe, does that change in the European policy could that deter any possibility of China taking further stakes in terms of the financing or an equity?
No, I think obviously we monitor the political developments all over the world, but as of now, just as with the Almirante Tamandaré financing and the upcoming Alexandre de Gusmão financing, we're continuing to work with Chinese financing parties, and they play an important role in our financing, and that's how we see it going forward in the future.
Okay, now one last question on this Illabella. Can you share us any details of that agreement?
Well, it's simply a loan linked to the Illabella cash flows.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 to ask the question. We will now take the next question from Mick P. from Barclays. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello, it's Mick here from Barclays. Question I may ask, question I want to ask if I may, is a few questions about cost inflation here. Obviously, you just ordered your 8th MPF floater. Can you just talk about the inflation between number 1 and 8 and how your copy and paste generic design of that has managed to offset it?
Yeah, if we look at the inflation, here I'm discussing about the inflation in general. If you look at an FPSO now compared to 3-4 years ago, you probably have seen a cost increase of anywhere between 30-50% across the board. Now, one of the priorities that we took, or one of the bets that we took some time ago, was saying if we're able to standardize, if we're able to repeat things, we're going to find ways to be able to reduce costs even during an inflation period. And I think some of the efforts that we're making are starting to bear fruit, in particular in the oil. So I'm not going to go into the detail, but suffice to say that we're starting to see the benefits of standardization.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Kirin Mulder. Follow-up question from him from ING. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Kirin, again, on my final questions. With regard to the projects under construction, it looks like that is more specified with regard to the Sepetiba. It's now second half of 2023. Was there a specific reason that it is now? It was only 2023, as I remember. And it is, in my view, a one-year delay. So is that related to COVID, et cetera? Is there anything to add to that? And the second is on Prosperity, which the other way around. It was originally planned for 2024, And if I read the text, the finalization of the commissioning, that means it will start, maybe in a month or one or two. So maybe you can elaborate why that is moving so fast.
I mean, so Prosperity, as we say, she arrived in Guyana. We're working on the commissioning, and we'll see when we're going to be ready on that. The client is also working. I mean, let's not forget, when clients speak about field to go in production, they speak about the overall field. When we speak about this, we're speaking about the FPSO. Most of the time, the FPSO is on a critical path, so usually the two are linked, but that's not always the case. And that you see the difference on Almirante Tamandaré between what we're saying and the information from the market. If I look at coming back to Prosperity, we're working on the commissioning of the project, but we cannot comment on when the field is going to be on production because that doesn't depend fully on us. With regard to the other project that you mentioned, Sepetiba, did we have some impact on the COVID? The answer to that is yes, compared to the original planning. However, the planning that we're showing at this stage has not changed over the past few months or more than a year in reality.
Okay, thank you.
Next up, we have Henk Slotboom from The Idea. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I'm not an expert on legal affairs and that sort of things, but I understood that there was some arm wrestling between the Guyana authorities and Exxon, on which there was a court ruling last week. I also understood that this will be taken to a higher court. Could that in any way affect SBM's operations in Guyana? Thank you.
The detail of the legal action that you're mentioning, we are not privy to that, and we don't have many details, but we don't see this bringing any impact. Now, more generally, what the Democratic Republic of Guyana has done in developing the field, their field and their resources in Guyana has been remarkable. Discovery was made in 2015, and first oil, and at the end of 2022, the field was producing more than 400,000 barrels of oil per day, so less than 7 years after discovery. In most countries in the world, the traditional model of development would mean that for another 3 years or at times 4 years, they still would not have any revenue. So I believe that this is organized in Guyana and by all the stakeholders. And given the current pressure that there exists today on the oil market, I believe this is a model which is going to stick in Guyana. And in fact, is going to create a precedent for other countries to develop their field faster.
Okay. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question.
Okay, so since there is no further question, I would like to thank you, all of us, for joining us today, and wish you a good day today, and you can now resume all the normal activity. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the SBM Offshore Conference Call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for your participation.